Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on illegal immigration right after this. You know, many of the lessons that you hear on this program are just a small part of the two-week school that we teach here on courtroom strategy and procedure. And this school includes lessons that range from what to do and what not to do at the arrest or when you receive a complaint, a summons, or a citation. And you'll learn how to make a chronology of the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence, just like the police do. And you'll learn how to conduct a hearing, present evidence, cross-examine witnesses, ask questions, make opening and closing statements, enter exhibits into evidence, write motions, briefs, affidavits, and asseverations. And we don't just cover what goes on in the courtroom. You'll learn preliminary procedures, arraignments, bail setting, what papers to file, how to put exculpatory evidence into the record, how to present your legal and lawful positions, what issues are appealable, and how to preserve those appealable issues for appellate review. There are 28 essential elements to master in courtroom strategy and procedure. 28, and you'll learn all of them here at the law school in this class. If you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. Remember, it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and it's free of charge, and you can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's George Gordon. That's 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. All right, we're talking about illegal immigration. Last time, we were talking about Arnold Schwarzenegger, the governor of California. He has a proposal in front of the legislature in a state that is $19 billion in deficit. And he's proposing to spend $400 million, that's about a half a billion dollars, round numbers, on insurance, which will include and cover all of the state's illegal alien children. Now, that's a very magnanimous thing for the government, or the governor in this case, to propose. He is suggesting that he spends $400 million of your money on these people. And if that's the way you want to spend your money, well, more power to you. Get right after it. I don't want to spend my money buying insurance, period. I sure don't want to spend my money buying insurance for people that are illegal. You know, those are criminals. Well, they're just children. Well, that's fine, but they're the children of illegals. Now, there's a billion people in China, and all those children need insurance, too. Now, if you want to spend money, why don't you go to China? Or why don't you just send your money to China and say, hey, buy insurance for these children? There are millions of children that are uninsured in Indonesia, North Korea, and probably all over Central and South America and Africa, and they all need insurance. Why don't you go buy it for them? You know, if that's what people want to do, they certainly do have a right to do that. I personally don't want to buy national health care insurance. I don't want to buy it for myself, and I sure as hell don't want to buy it for you. And if I wouldn't buy it for you, I don't want to buy it from some stranger over here either. Now, that's my personal view. But now the governor, and this is where socialist governments come into play, has decided for you that this is the best way for us to spend your money. Now, it would seem like to me that if you're in deficit $19 billion, I mean, you can't pay your bills as it is. If I was struggling to make my car payment, I don't think I'd want to go out and buy a big screen TV. I think I'd save all the money that I possibly could to make the payments that I'm already committed for. Now, I mentioned to you last time that Arnold Schwarzenegger is a very smart, intelligent fellow. He's worth a lot of money. Came over here from Austria. He used to belong to the Hitler Youth, and his daddy was a Nazi. I wouldn't be a bit surprised, but what, he's a closet Nazi to this day, holding it against the United States of America for having defeated his country in war. And now that he's in a position of power, I would suspect that he would like to see the United States destroyed. That's my take on it. Well, I'll tell you what. If I wanted to destroy somebody, I'd want to bankrupt them. And everything that I see that man's doing is aimed at bankrupting you people out there in California. So I just got this suspicious mind that says, this isn't in my best interest. Well, whose best interest is it in? Is it revenge? Is it stupidity? It could be stupidity, but he doesn't strike me as being stupid. He strikes me as being a very, very intelligent fellow. So that tells me that he has to be doing what he's doing on purpose. And if you're doing something on purpose that has a bad end or a bad result to it, then it has to be some other motive. You know, it comes under vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, or fear. Looks like to me we're dealing with jealousy. And he's going to execute jealousy. I'm jealous of America because you defeated us in war, and I'm going to get even with you, and I'm going to do my part. And my part is to destroy what I can. And he's got the biggest state in the Union, and he's in the process of destroying it. And by the way, that California, if it were an independent nation in the world, would be the sixth largest economy in the world. So they're not talking about peanuts. Now, there was another problem over here, and it was, as noted in the article by Edward Cifuentes in the North County Times, the illegal alien cost to taxpayers in California is $9 billion a year. And now remember, you're spending $10 billion a year, and now we're going to add another $9 billion a year to that. There was two numbers here that I read to you last time. 10 and 9 is 19, and that's just exactly what their budget deficit is, caused by the illegal aliens, 3 million of them. Now, if you got 3 million of them in California, that's causing you a round number, $20 billion deficit. Well, what do you think it's doing to Georgia and Utah and Illinois and all the rest of the states that have large populations of these illegals? Now, remember, in California, it's costing about $2,000. If you add in another $10 billion more, now that's $19 billion. If one-third of Californians pay taxes, that's about $2,000 per taxpayer. $2,000 per taxpayer in California. If that's what it costs them there, doesn't it cost $2,000 for taxpayers wherever else these people are located? Now, is that the way you want to spend $2,000? Or put another way, if the illegal aliens weren't here, so they don't have an illegal alien problem in Sweden, Japan, China. They don't allow it, period. You know, we don't allow it. They don't allow it in Mexico. They do not have an illegal alien problem in Mexico. And they, if you went into Mexico without your visa, if you went in there and you stayed beyond your period of time, they'd put you in prison. Now, we could do that here in this country, but prison costs a lot of money. It's about $35,000 per prisoner in jail, in round numbers. In many places, it's more than that. The hard truth about immigration, Samuelson goes on to note, consider a study of Mexican immigrants by the Harvard economist George Borges and Lawrence Katz. Mexicans are now the single largest group of U.S. immigrants, 30% of the total in 2000. Indeed, the present Mexican immigration is historically unprecedented, being both numerically and proportionately larger than any other immigrant influx in the past century. In 1920, for example, the two largest immigrant groups, Germans and Italians, totaled only 24% of the immigrant population. Some Mexican Americans have made spectacular gains, but the overall picture is dispiriting. Among men, about 1 in 20 U.S. workers is now a Mexican immigrant. In 1970, that was less than 1 in 100. The vast majority of Mexican workers lacked a high school diploma in 2000, 63% for men, 57% for women. Only a tiny share had college degrees, 3% for men, 5% for women. And by contrast, only 7% of native-born U.S. workers were high school dropouts, and 28% were college students in 2000. Mexican workers are inevitably crammed into low-wage jobs, food workers, janitors, gardeners, laborers, farm workers. In 2000, their average wages were 41% lower than the average U.S. wage for men and 33% lower for women. All right, now, what happened that all of these people want or need to come to the United States? It's called NAFTA, N-A-F-T-A, the North America Free Trade Association. President Clinton was instrumental in getting that passed. And what that did was it opened the border for Mexicans' goods to come into the United States. And that was great for General Motors because they didn't have to pay any duty or tariffs on parts that they imported from Mexico. It was bad for the Mexicans because we shipped our subsidized corn. See, corn in the United States is subsidized by the government. The government gives out cash to farmers when they grow corn, and it's below a certain price, to guarantee them a profit to produce cheap feedstock for the American cattle industry. As a result of that, we have a surplus of corn. We ship it south of the border, and we effectively destroyed the Mexican economy. Wages, which were $9 around 2000, are now down to $5 a day. So they've lost money, and the farmers down there cannot make money growing corn. That's what they used to grow. And now they have to compete with the American with 600 horsepower at his disposal. And so they can't produce this GMO Roundup Ready corn like they can here in the United States. And so now we've screwed up their market, and now they've got all this unemployment. So Vicente Fox came up here and he says, hey, listen, we got this bad problem down here. And what we need to do is to take the pressure off. And so we want you to open the border up there. And so we'll do two things. One, it'll take the pressure off us, and it'll give you all this cheap labor. Is that gonna cause a problem for Americans? Well, look, you've got the major corporations outsourcing your jobs to India, China, the Philippines, and Indonesia already. Then you've got all these Mexicans coming up here and undercutting the low-end jobs here in the United States. So they're taking the good jobs from the steel mills and the auto industry, shipping those to China. Then they're taking all the cheap jobs that were available to our low-end people up here and giving that to the Mexicans. And this leaves then a tremendous welfare burden. And while you're not paying welfare to the Mexican, you're paying welfare to the black man that he displaced. See, back in the 50s and 60s, we had a gigantic textile industry here in the United States. Low-paying jobs. And then we exported that overseas, shipped those jobs overseas. Now, those people needed to go work someplace, you know, Holiday Inn or janitorial work or whatever. Now you bring in the Mexicans, and they take those jobs and leaves our guys sitting high and dry. So now we've got about 9 million people unemployed inside the country after we exported 6 million jobs outside the country. That's 15 million. Now, that doesn't make any sense to me. Well, it makes all the sense in the world, though, if your objective here was to destroy the American economy and to meld the country into a new world order. That would make sense. And if Arnold Schwarzenegger and Barack Obama are in on the game and that's what their objective is, well, they're way ahead of schedule. I mean, they've got this thing wrapped up. It's a done deal. There's no turning back. You're not going to save it now. The tipping point has been passed. I'm not sure that God himself could come in here and turn this thing around. I think you're just going to have to start over from scratch in the final analysis. Now, that's what he's got in mind anyway. And when this is all said and done, we'll start this thing over from scratch. But boy, this is going to be a painful, painful lesson. Now, some things we do know or we can infer. And for today's Mexican immigrants, legal or illegal, the closest competitors are tomorrow's Mexican immigrants, whether they're legal or illegal. Because the more of them who arrive, the harder it's going to be for existing low-skilled workers to advance. Despite the recession, immigration did not much slow after 2000. Not surprisingly, a study by the Pew Hispanic Center found that the inflation-adjusted weekly earnings for all Hispanics, foreign and American born, dropped by 2.2% from 2003. Latinos are the only major group of workers whose wages have fallen for two consecutive years, said the study. And similarly, the more poor immigrants, the harder it will be for schools to improve the skills of their children. The schools will be overwhelmed. The same goes for social services. So a notable portion of rising health costs and insurance premiums is due to subsidizing the medical costs of uninsured illegal aliens. After all, somebody has to pay for it. Now let's think about that for a second. As more and more aliens come into the country, they have to bid the jobs down, down, down. This is what happened in Argentina when their unemployment rate shot up to 62% after their economy collapsed in 2003. It's what we call a race to the bottom. Let's suppose a guy's got a job and it pays him $10 an hour. The unemployed people come to the company and they say, you've got this guy working over there for 10 bucks an hour. I will do the job for $8. So they terminate me and they hire you. Now you're working for $8 an hour. And that's the new status quo. Now, the next unemployed guy comes in and says, hey, you got this guy working for $8. I'll work for $6. And so they let you go. Then the next guy comes along and the next guy and the next guy. Can you see where we're going with this? All we're doing is bidding the price down. Labor, like buying an automobile or anything else, is a function of the marketplace. You know, how much do I have to pay? So you can't get mad at the farmer in California that wants to pay $2 an hour to an illegal alien instead of $7 an hour to a legal one. I mean, you know, wake up and smell the coffee here. These are competitive forces that are at work. And these competitive forces over here is what we call the marketplace. It's what economies are all about. Now, the socialists that are putting in all these social programs, it sounds good, you know, that we should have a program, a social welfare net over here. When people can't afford to pay hospital bills, they should be able to go to the hospital and somebody else will pay it for them. That sounds good. But unfortunately, when you give these freebies away, it perverts the morals of the people that are the recipients. And then it doesn't take the guy long to figure out, well, let's see, I'm getting this for nothing, so why should I work for it? The opposite to that is, if I want it, I have to work for it. And if I don't work for it, I'm not going to get it. And in the Bible, we see a little principle of law here. It says, go to the ant, you sluggard, and learn of her ways. And he who doesn't work doesn't eat. That's simple enough. Now, the Mexicans are hardworking people, and they didn't have a problem until we up here in the north signed up on this NAFTA trick. Now, this NAFTA thing is great for American corporations and business. It's just that it's bad for you and me, and it's bad for all those Mexicans down there. And so it upset the status quo in both economies, and so now what's good for General Motors and General Electric and Microsoft is bad for corn farmers in Mexico, and it's good for corn farmers in Monsanto in North America. Meanwhile, it's unemployed a bunch of Mexicans, and now they're coming up here looking for work. And then, just conversely, we've got this real neat welfare system over here, so why don't we just take advantage of it while it's there? And if the Americans ever wake up one of these days and shut it off, well, that's fine. But as long as it's there, I think I'll take advantage of it. All right, so that's where we're at to this moment in time. Somebody's got to pay for it, and it happens to be you. Now, as detailed in Illegal Aliens Threaten U.S. Medical System, between 1993 and 2003, 60 California hospitals closed because half their services were unpaid. Another 24 California hospitals are on the verge of closure, and both Pennsylvania and New Jersey hospitals recently reported that they provided almost $2 billion in free emergency and short-term care services, in large part to illegal aliens. Minnesota County Commissioners say that the cost of medical care for uninsured immigrants is too high for local governments to bear, and they expect a $4.2 billion budget shortfall over the next 2 years. North Carolina has about $1.4 billion in unreimbursed hospital expenses annually. The Texas Hospital Association directly spent $393 million treating illegal aliens in 2002. One-third of the patients treated by the L.A. County Health System are illegal aliens, and the system is facing a $300 million deficit. In Arizona, the Southeast Arizona Medical Center had a $1 billion shortfall and recently filed for bankruptcy. Now, as reported in the Monterey Herald in December of 2006, in Medi-Cal payments, or Medi-Cal pays for 100,000 births annually to undocumented immigrants. More than 100,000 undocumented women each year bear children in California with expenses paid by Medi-Cal, according to the state reports. Such births and related expenses account for more than $400 million of the nearly $1 billion that the program spends annually on health care for illegal immigrants in California, the Los Angeles Times reported, citing state reports. Now, California long has been one of the more generous states in offering such benefits to illegal immigrants, covering everything from pregnancy tests to postpartum checkups. Many illegal immigrants who might otherwise shy away from government services view care associated with childbirth as safe to seek. I wasn't afraid at all, said Sandra Alrede, an illegal immigrant from Colombia who recently gave birth at a Los Angeles hospital. I'd always heard that pregnant women are treated well here. So this is the impact in a large city. Now, unfortunately, smaller communities are also being impacted, often disproportionately, so as the costs need to be spread over a smaller base. Now, let me show you a little something here that comes out of California, just so happens to be. And let's see if I can find my paper here, which deals with California businesses leaving the state. California's hostile business climate, 114 businesses moving out of the state of California. Now, this isn't anything to get excited about. 114 businesses in California, there are tens of thousands of businesses in California. So just because 100 of them move out, it's no big deal. And I'm not sure that there's anybody there in California to look at this, but you know, it's symptomatic of a deeper problem that you have there in California, and indeed you have it all over the United States. Now, there's a Business Week chart that comes out, and the Business Week chart identifies the states in the United States that are the best states to do business in, and then the ones that aren't so good, and so on down the line. A second one, one of them's from Business Week, the other one is from Forbes. Let me run down the list here, and I'll show you where that's what that's talking about. If you were to look at a Forbes report on the best states for doing business in, which state would rank at the top and which state would rank number 50 at the bottom? Well, the best state to do business in the United States is Virginia. And in six areas of business interest, business costs, labor, regulatory environment, economic climate, growth prospects, and quality of life, Virginia scores number one. Then, if we look at the state that scores the poorest, the guy that's at the very bottom of the list scores number 50, is Louisiana. So when we look at business costs in Louisiana, labor costs, regulatory environment, the economic climate, growth prospects, and the quality of life, Virginia ranks number one, Louisiana ranks number 50. Now, the business costs index is based on the cost of labor, energy and taxes, labor measures, educational attainment, net migration and projected population growth. Regulatory environment measures regulatory and tort claims climate, incentives and so on, transportation and bond ratings. Economic climate reflects the job income and gross state product growth, as well as unemployment and the presence of big corporations. Growth products or prospects reflects projected job income and gross state product growth, as well as business openings and closings and venture capital investments. The quality of life index is an index of schools, health care, crime, cost of living, and the poverty rates. Now, in California, as we've seen here, you take a look at schools. The schools cost $10,700 to educate a kid in public school. If you start flooding those schools with these illegals, then the quality of the education goes down. And that's what's going on here in the Forbes report. So when we look at the top 10, Virginia, Texas, North Carolina, Utah, Colorado, Idaho, Nebraska, Florida, and Maryland are the top 10. Then when you go down to the bottom 10, it's Louisiana, West Virginia, Mississippi, Alaska, Michigan, Maine, Illinois, Rhode Island, and Pennsylvania. The other 30 states rank somewhere in between. Now, let me share with you four or five experiences of businesses in California, just to pick one. Now, California is not in the top 10. California is not in the bottom 10. They're kind of in the middle. In fact, I'll show you where California is here on the list. They're number 36. They're just a little bit up above the bottom 10. They're tending toward right down at the bottom, but not quite there yet. Well, it's no mystery as to what causes companies to leave any state, but especially California. It's because of high taxes, over-regulation, workers' compensation costs, and a legal environment that is stacked against businesses, coupled with lengthy and costly construction permitting requirements. So if you're a contractor in California and you want to build a house, it'll cost you $30,000 just to get the permits. And I'm sure you people in California would say, well, we need that $30,000 spent to make sure that our quality of life doesn't deteriorate. Well, let me ask you this. When your state goes bankrupt, how's that going to impact upon your quality of life? Now, they're building houses in Virginia, and it doesn't cost $30,000 in Virginia. And I suspect that you would say, well, see, they've got a bad quality of life there. No. Virginia ranks number 5 in the top 10. Quality of life there is pretty good. They got good schools. Now, they're doing something different there in Virginia, Texas, North Carolina, Utah, Colorado, Idaho, Nebraska, Florida, and Maryland. They're doing something different than you're doing in California. It doesn't cost $30,000 to get the permits to build a house there. Their workmen's compensation costs aren't as high. And they don't have as high taxes. And they don't have as much regulation. And the legal environment is not stacked against business the way it is in California and some of these other states that are lower down the list. Now, the business environment in China is so good that their economy is growing right at 10% this year. Now, you can sit there and say, yeah, but they're polluting their environment. Well, that's probably true, you know. So you're going to have a clean environment while they come repossess your house and haul your furniture out. There are trade-offs in life, and we have to make those kinds of choices. It's the way life is. Life is filled with choices. We'd like to have all of these neat things, but can we afford them? So we have to decide, well, what can we afford and what can't we afford, and then go from there. Other contributing factors include agencies being staffed with individuals that are unsympathetic or even hostile to business concerns in California. Wildly excessive government spending contributes to unpredictable government behavior at the state level and also the local level. So when businesses see that the governor wants to spend $400 million so that they can pay for the insurance costs of illegal alien children, the businesses there take a look at that and say, you know, they're going to come to us and tell us they want us to collect that. That means we've got to raise our prices in order to generate that revenue. That means we're going to have fewer customers coming in to buy. And then they're going to raise our compensation rates over here. And when we put all of these factors together, the business climate here is poor. Our profits go down. We're not making money. The only purpose now, remember, for business is to make profit. They're not there for any other reason. Hey, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, we invite you to go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, click onto the archives page, and download it right there. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then we invite you to go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about illegal immigration and its economic impact on the state of California right at this moment in time. Going on here, we're talking about the reason that businesses are leaving California. Now, 114 of them have left over the past year. And when interviewed as to why have you left or why are you contemplating leaving, why aren't you expanding your workforce here in California, etc., many of these business owners give the answer. They say, well, I'm leaving because. Now, I left California in 1972, and I'm telling you why I left. I left because of these six indices: business costs, labor, regulatory environment, and growth prospects. I had a good business, it was running fine, and I moved to Idaho. Idaho, remember, is in the top 10. I left a bad business environment and moved my business to a better business environment. And over the last 25 years, little small mom-and-pop entrepreneur businesses in California have sold out, left, closed their doors, and moved to places like Texas, Virginia, North Carolina, Utah, Colorado, Idaho, Florida, and Maryland for that express reason. And every time one of them does it, it takes jobs away from you in California. It exacerbates your problem in the same way that the Sahel in the Sahara Desert is expanding at the rate of 100 square miles a year. The desert, the Sahara Desert, grows by 100 square miles a year. And why is that? Well, because the people there are so poor, and because the desert is so bad, that in order to feed their goats, they have to cut down trees. So it's common for these people to go out and cut down trees so that the goats will have something to eat. They can eat the leaves off the trees. Now, each one of those trees gives off about 1,800 gallons of rainwater per year. And every time you cut down one of those trees to feed your goats, you eliminate 1,800 gallons of rainwater over your land. And why is it that we need to cut the trees down? Because we don't have enough rain to grow grass to feed our goats. So we're cutting down the trees so that we can feed our goats, but that's going to produce less and less rain. On the north end of the Sahara Desert, they're planting trees. So along the Mediterranean coast, from Tunisia all the way over to Egypt, they planted a 30-mile-wide band of trees, and it works so well, they're now working on the second 30-mile-wide band. It has increased rainfall over North Africa very dramatically, and as they progress along planting more trees, they will produce more rain. Well, in California, they're doing exactly the same thing, except that it's with their economy. What they're doing here is they're raising the taxes and they're raising the cost of doing business in California so that they can have more revenue to spend on more illegal aliens. In this case, we're going to spend $400 million on illegal alien health insurance for children. While you're doing that, you're driving the businesses that collect and pay this tax over for you out of the state. Now, that is not sustainable. It doesn't make any sense, but that's the way the game is being played. And it's a matter of time until it reaches critical mass. Now, it already has. And it's going to collapse. And when it does, there's going to be weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. Not only aren't you going to have the money to pay the insurance premiums for those nice little children, but you're not going to have any businesses to work at. Poverty is going to be the result. Unemployment, poverty, loss of your property. It'll be like it was in the 1930s during the Great Depression. That's what's coming. Now, the time was when we were being preached at, back in the 50s and 60s, that this is where we're headed, and we need to change now so that we can avoid this ultimate disaster. Well, I'm here to report to you that we didn't change in the 50s and 60s, and we didn't change in the 70s and 80s, and we didn't change in the 90s. We haven't changed in the last 10 years. We're not changing today, and we ain't changing tomorrow. We are going to ride this ship to the bottom of the ocean. Now, I don't want to go down with it, so I just wanted to point out to you that the game's over, but we just haven't broken up the party yet. Now, apparently, no state agency keeps track of the enterprises that move out of California or which companies elect to expand in other states, even though they are headquartered here in California. This lack of knowledge is very evident for elected officials who deny that the state's anti-business attitudes and the state's anti-business policies hurt commercial enterprises. So, without a central repository, it's difficult to determine how many jobs are lost specifically because of California's unfriendly business environment. Now, you should be working hard to attract business. That's what they do in Virginia. They work hard there to get businesses to move from California and Michigan to Texas and California. When I was up in Idaho, the state government up there offered Hewlett-Packard a hell of a neat incentive program to build a plant there in Boise, Idaho. They did. Instead of building it in California, they built it in Idaho. Now, that's not good for you people in California. It's good for you people up in Idaho. It's not good in California. Now, here's a couple of three examples. Abrex Health, a unit of Los Angeles-based Abrex Biosciences, opened a new plant that will create 200 jobs in 2010 in Phoenix, Arizona. This follows the company's Phoenix expansions that occurred in 2007 and 2008. The Alza Corporation in 2007 eliminated 600 jobs in their drug R&D department while also exiting its Mountain View, California headquarters. At the time, the company said that its 1,200-person Vacaville facility would continue to operate. But the Vacaville Reporter on October 23, 2009 revealed that the plant is being offered for sale by the J&J company, its parent company, and it's unclear if more layoffs are in the facility's future. Now, it could well be that some of these companies, because of the recession, the economic downturn, are closing their doors and they're not moving anywhere. That's certainly true. A lot of businesses are going out of business. But the 114 that are on this list, oh no, they're not going out of business. In fact, they're increasing the size and scope of their businesses. They're just doing it in other states. And that's the case here. See, they're moving out of Mountain View, and they're moving to Phoenix, Arizona. American AVK, a producer of fire hydrants and other water-related products, moved from Fresno to Minden, Nevada. American Racing moved its auto wheel production to Mexico, ending most of its 47-year operation in California. Apple Computer has expanded in other states, most recently with a $1 billion facility planned for North Carolina. Audex Corporation relocated from Redwood City, California, and to accommodate growth, moved to a 78,000-square-foot facility in Wilson, Oregon. The Apira Healthcare Group of Lake Forest is shifting jobs from California to Overland Park, Kansas, a suburb of Kansas City. Assurant Incorporated cut 325 jobs in Orange County and consolidated positions in Georgia, Ohio, and South Carolina. Barefoot Motors, a small green manufacturer, moved from Sonoma County and will grow in Ashland, Oregon. Baz, Houston company, located in Garden Grove, has slowly been building a workforce of about 35 people in Tijuana, Mexico. In early 2010, the company said that it expects to move more jobs to Mexico, citing cost and regulatory difficulties in Southern California. The Beckman Coulter Company, a biomedical test equipment manufacturer, headquartered in Brea, relocated part of its Palo Alto facilities to Indianapolis, Indiana, 2 years ago. In early 2010, it's making a multi-million dollar investment to expand and to create up to 100 new jobs in Indiana. The company said that the area offers a favorable business climate and lower total cost of operations, plus a local workforce with strong skills in both engineering and manufacturing. Now let me point out something to you, boys and girls, because it costs a lot of money, takes a lot of time, effort, and energy, and nobody wants to move. Nobody. Now you can rest assured that if the business climate in California was equal to Indianapolis, Indiana, just equal, nobody would move and spend millions of dollars to build a new facility in Indianapolis and start over again. So things have to be pretty bad to move your business out of some place and move it to somewhere else. And Michigan is one of the poorest places to move to, and Detroit, which has got to be about the worst business climate that you can imagine, is deteriorating every day right in front of our eyes. And the people there, the socialists who are in control, are unable to see what the problem is. Or they know full well what the problem is, and they're exacerbating the problem because they have an agenda that they want to fulfill. They want to destroy the economic base of Detroit, Michigan. Boys and girls, they have succeeded beyond their wildest expectations. Detroit, Michigan in 1804 was nothing more than a military garrison. Between 1804 and 1900, it turned into a city in 100 years of around, I think, 100,000 or more. By 1960, when the city peaked, it was 1.1 million. Today, it's 300,000. all of the businesses that were there in the 1960s when the city peaked, those businesses are gone. They have 149 square miles in the city limits of Detroit, Michigan. And they now have 36,000 acres. Let me see how much that is. 36,000 acres planted in farm crops inside the city limits of Detroit, Michigan. So 36,000 divided by 640 acres. 56 square miles of the city of Michigan has been torn down and converted back to farmland. Well, okay, if that's what you want, if that's what you want to do, if you want your businesses to move out of Detroit and move someplace else, what you do is you raise the cost of doing business in Detroit to such a level that those businesses cannot exist there. They cannot make a profit there. And you will succeed. They will move. And they will move to some other location. Now, they don't have to move to Mexico. You'll notice here a couple of them did. But other businesses are moving to other locations here in the United States. Anytime that a state makes the business climate desirable, beneficial, profitable, then you can expect business to boom there, business to move there, business to want to locate there. But you can drive it away just as well. And the socialists are doing that. And Barack Obama, at the head of the socialist agenda here, is driving businesses out of America. This healthcare plan that you're putting into operation, it's really too little too late. And what you're doing is throwing gasoline on the fire. It's exactly the wrong move to be made at exactly the wrong time. And you're not going to change anything. I'm not sitting here saying, you know, let's get on the bandwagon and start voting somebody out of office. But I thought somebody ought to at least tell you, you know, what some of your problems are and why this thing is turning to hell or going to hell in the handbasket. All right, going on here then, talking about the impact, that is the impact in a large city. Unfortunately, the smaller communities are also being impacted. And often, disproportionately, so as the costs need to be spread over a smaller base, as noted in Latino births on the rise at the hospital in Jackson. A growing number of Latino births has boosted the number of births at St. John's Medical Center, which broke its record with 415 babies born last year. And while the number of Caucasian births has held steady at around 277 to 300 per year, the number of Latino births has increased from none in 1990 to more than 100 last year. Now, there's not really an increasing birth rate among the Caucasian population, she said. The primary population increase is due to the birth rate among the immigrant population. Now, the hospital has averaged 277 births per year with spikes of 327 in fiscal year 99, 340 in 2002, 336 in 2003. The demographics are changing. Day said there are more Latinas here of childbearing age. And she said Jackson Hole's first Latino immigrants were men who would leave their families behind in Mexico. And she said their wives have begun moving to the area as well. So now do you note the trend? Now this is Jackson Hole, Wyoming, a little small town up in the mountains of Wyoming, up in the Rocky Mountains. Now as this progresses along, notice here in this hospital you got 100 Latino births. That has to be paid for by somebody. Now are they being paid for by these Mexican workers or are they being paid for by the white taxpayers of Wyoming? Now maybe Jackson Hole, an exclusive vacation area for the wealthy, can afford to pay for the medical expenses of all the illegal aliens, but many less affluent communities cannot. Now as noted in a March 2005 article, the LA emergency rooms are full of illegal immigrants. 60% of the county's uninsured patients are not U.S. citizens. More than half are here illegally. About 2 million undocumented aliens in Los Angeles County alone are crowding emergency rooms because they can't afford to see a doctor. According to the State Association of Hospitals, California's public health system is on the brink of collapse. In Los Angeles County, patients can wait for days for a hospital bed and up to 2 years for gallbladder surgery. The hospitals are closing because of the totality of the uninsured, said Dr. Thomas Garthwaite, director of the Los Angeles County Health Department. If you're legally a resident in California and you're poor, you have a right to basic services. But some critics say the taxpayers can't be the HMO to the world. Last year, Los Angeles County spent $340 million to treat the uninsured. That's roughly $1,000 for every taxpayer. Now, what they came up with is the Obamacare plan. This isn't just happening in Los Angeles County, children. This is occurring everywhere in America. It's just occurring in greater proportion in Los Angeles County, in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. But it's occurring everywhere. So to cover this, we're going to go into socialized medicine for the entire nation to solve the problem. Well, we never had a problem until we had the illegal immigration. With legal immigration, you can assimilate those people and put them into your economy. But, you know, you've got 12 million people here that aren't assimilated, can't be assimilated, and they're taking the services. Their children go to the public schools, and they and their children go to the public hospitals. It's true. They're not on welfare. They can't get on welfare. They can't draw Social Security, but they can take these other benefits. And medical care and schools are the two most expensive. And remember, these people working at minimum wage, hell, if you're making $10 an hour, for crying out loud, let's try it, 2,000 hours in a year times 10 is $20,000, and that's the poverty level. If these guys are making $10 an hour, they're paying no taxes, but they're taking the services. That's the bottom line. So you got to be making more than $10 an hour in order to be contributing anything to the social system. And the social system is breaking down. So the Obama administration says, okay, the solution to that is we'll socialize the entire medical industry. That way we can get everybody paying into it so that we can pay for these illegal aliens. Wouldn't it make more sense to shut off the illegal aliens? But if you did that, then the economy might rebound. And the objective is to destroy the economy. So if destruction of the economy is the objective, it is working like a shot. Boys and girls, you're on the right track. If, on the other hand, you didn't want to destroy your economy, then you got to solve the immigration problem, and you're not going to do that because the federal government in Washington has opened the border, and they're going to keep it open. And it's not just the Democrats, it's the Republicans also. The powers that be have ordered that the borders stay open and that the social services continue to flow. Now, that's the state of the economy. It's like it being on the Titanic, and the ship is taken on water, and it's going to sink. And the captain orders, shut off all the pumps. Stop pumping. It probably wasn't going to save the ship anyway with all the pumps running, but shutting the pumps off will hasten the sinking. And opening the border is going to hasten the sinking. All right, we're about out of time. I got to give you a reminder here that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log, schedule, and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. I've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time.